Coming up on podcast 1170, asking if Genesis is about to deliver EV luxury on a budget. Stick around, we'll tell you more. Also on the podcast today, we're looking at Cybertruck delivery times, Kansas City putting in street-mounted EV chargers, and how many EV models are actually on the market around the world. We'll find out today. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you're listening around the world, welcome to EV News Daily for Sunday, 8th of August. My name is Martin Lee. My job to go through every EV story, even at the weekends, and filter out the stuff you just need to know about. So, headline story today then, and a bit of a question. Do you think Genesis can deliver luxury EVs on more of a budget? Well, the G80 is topping the sales rankings in their domestic market of South Korea, and it's why I ask the question, because Genesis's first electric vehicle, the G80, has sold more than 2,000 units, emerging as the best-selling model in the domestic EV market, luxury market, which is always dominated by imported brands, the likes of Tesla's Model S, Model X. Well, the electrified G80 was released only in July and has now had over 2,000 units in the last 3 weeks or so being ordered. It says businesskorea.co.kr. It can do 427 kilometres of range, has an 87.2 kilowatt hour battery, will get to 80% in 22 minutes. If you get on a high powered charger, it's an 800 volt system, 272 kilowatts of power. So nice and quick. It'll do 0 to 60 less than 5 seconds. But of course, it is all about refined luxury on a budget. The interior, the stitching, the seats, yes, they're leather, and I don't know if you can get an animal-free alternative. The infotainment systems, the fact that you can have two rear screens on the back of the driver and passenger seat for the kids. I mean, most of the kids have got the kind of iPads anyway with all their apps on, but you know, screens in the back and heated and, you know, cooled seats all around and tons of technology, great autonomous driving. And some people think the Genesis styling is, you know, as someone said to me, like, you know, take a premium German car, describe it to a designer down the phone, and that's what they've come up with. But I kind of get that. But would you buy one? Well, Genesis Europe started their Instagram account a little while ago, which was the dead giveaway. They're selling them here. As of now, you still can't go on to the configurator of the Genesis UK website and order a G80 electric. Interestingly, they don't call it the G80 electric. They call it the electrified G80. Now, if you live in kind of EV world, as I do, maybe you do, you know that car makers, in trying to get around, you know, trying to sound kind of more green than they really are, they'll talk about electrified cars. There's, oh, we're going to have a million electrified cars on the road by so-and-so date. And, you know, what they mean is hybrids and soft hybrids and plug-ins and full electrics. And so when a car is electric, you always say, like, it's the electric version. So it should be called the G80 electric because it's all electric. They call it the electrified G80. So again, when I first started reading about this months ago, it's kind of like, okay, it's electrified. That's going to be a shabby hybrid and at best a plug-in. But it's not. It's a full electric car, but they call it electrified, which is, you know, it's weird. I would change that if I were running Genesis, but, you know, I'm clearly not. But I'm really, really intrigued because, of course, you take all of that technology transfer from the parent company, which is Hyundai, so Hyundai Kia Genesis, and I just think you get a ton for your money. But if you go for the non-electric G80, so yeah, it comes in either a diesel or a petrol engine, you know, it starts at £32,000, and you can go check it out on the Genesis UK website, and yes, you can add options packs and nicer wheels and, you know, the interior pack, etc., the all-glass roof, you can do that, but it starts at what is, you know, basically ID4 beating, ID3 beating, IONIQ 5 beating, Kia EV6 beating, Tesla beating prices. Okay, that's for the combustion version. Don't know the price of the electric version in the UK, but it's something that I've been watching for a while now, and I've been wanting to talk about on the podcast, and then I saw this story about how well it's doing in its domestic market and thought, well, you know, today's the day. I'll make it a bit of a feature and talk about them, because I'm really, really curious about the Genesis brand. They are coming to Europe. They are promoting themselves. They're at Goodwood. Maybe you saw them at Goodwood if you attended, so really interesting. It also has what the Hyundai and the Kia, so the IONIQ 5 has vehicle to load. It has those plug sockets inside and out. The G80 also has vehicle to load. 220 volt domestic outlets on the side. And so, yeah, I mean, it's all that great technology that we're raving about with the Ioniq and the Kia EV6. But in a, you know, probably it's not going to be for everyone, but for certain people, maybe even a certain age of, I don't know, who want something a little bit more refined, but maybe not as brutally quick. This could just give you so much for your money. But I've never driven a Genesis. So anyway, that's the story today. And maybe we'll make it a future question of the week about how you feel about these kind of, what are they called, challenger brands? Maybe that's what they call the banks that are, you know, set up, that you're just on the app and all that kind of stuff. The challenger banks. Well, the challenger brands. Maybe the Chinese ones, the Korean ones. Maybe that's a future question of the week. Now we'll talk about Tesla's Model Y. Arriving in Europe, the first Model Ys are now here. German manager of Tesla making public on his LinkedIn channel, which I'm really surprised about. The official start of deliveries is scheduled for September. Some say it's going to be the end of August. According to electrive.com, the Model Y can be ordered in Germany since the beginning of July. Market launch of the Model Y in Europe is earlier than last stated on Tesla's website, but later than originally planned, if that makes sense, because by now those cars should have been coming out of Giga Berlin. The first ship has now docked. Now, the chap who put it on his LinkedIn page, Daniel Rieck, R-I-E-K is his surname. He is a account manager in Munich, announcing on social media that the Model Y has arrived in Europe, which, again, I'm surprised about, because nobody in Tesla is allowed to talk about product launches on their social media. There is one person in the company that does that. So I haven't checked it as of today. Maybe that's been deleted by now. Other stuff has. I've seen stuff tweeted and, or, you know, social media stuff from Tesla staff before, and yeah, inevitably it comes down. If it's about a kind of product launch or something big where it's like, oh, hang on a minute, why is this, you know, employee in Germany and not Elon Musk saying, hey, Model Y is in Europe? Maybe he's cool with it. I don't know. Tesla has also invited journalists to their showroom in Berlin on the 19th of August. Sounds like a giveaway to me. And whilst that is great news, it'll come as no surprise that the delay to the Cybertruck is now official. They have pushed the release of the Cybertruck back to sometime in 2022, according to the configuration page. It says you can customize your truck when production gets nearer in 2022. Applies regardless of any model that you choose, whether it's the single motor or up to the tri-motor as well, according to Engadget. That could pose a competitive challenge for Tesla, they say. GMC's Hummer EV could well beat Cybertruck to market. Rivian certainly will, because they are saying, well, it's going to be September, they're saying, the R1T and the R1S. Ford's F-150 is due, they say, spring 2022. But one of my buddies got to go and have a look at it being built. Tom Malogny, who I do another podcast with on Fridays, was invited by Ford to go and have a look around the facility. And he couldn't drive the F-150 Lightning. He had to be driven by their kind of head of electric program. But he said, look, it feels so together, so finished, because, well, the Ford F-150 Lightning is a Ford F-150. It's why they've been able to make it so cheap, because, you know, you're buying a million of those seats at a time and a million of those switches at a time. And so, you know, he said, look, it's really well bolted together. And, you know, if you didn't know that he was driving in a prototype vehicle, then he said it felt ready. But anyway, 6 months away from those. So, yeah, both of those could beat Cybertruck to market. There is so much pent up demand for Cybertruck. Some people saying over a million orders now, but that seems to be some dude that keeps a Google sheet online that then gets quoted, so I'm not too sure about that. But either way, look, whether it's, you know, half a million or a million and a half, there is a huge pent-up demand, and, oh man, those buyers cannot wait to get a Cybertruck in their driveway. Coming up on the podcast, we'll talk about getting some discounts off used EVs and plugging your EV into street lamps. Stick around, we'll tell you more soon. Now, talking Tesla, well, sort of, because this company have named Tesla in their press release, but it's not really official. In order to make commercial sense, the Tesla semi-truck, which is, again, officially postponed 2022, will charge its massive battery packs on megawatt chargers. Mega chargers, as Tesla have called them. I mean, I could charge at 500 kilowatts, I suppose, but, you know, 1 megawatt, is you know, I think what it will be, you know, most likely. But now a company says that they are working on a way of wirelessly charging commercial vehicles from between 500 kilowatts to a megawatt. This company is WAVE, W-A-V-E, Wireless Advanced Vehicle Electrification, putting out a press release that they are developing wireless charging for heavy-duty vehicles, planning to have a big primary coil embedded into the road, which sends power to a plate which sits underneath the vehicle. It can be up to 25 centimetres away. According to Inside EVs, they say the current state of the art truck charging features conductive charging. The recently announced Tesla Semi concept design has the largest advertised range of any trucks of 500 miles with an 80% charge in 30 minutes. The battery pack will be at least 800 kilowatt hours, probably even higher. And it must have a target charge rate of about 1.5 megawatts. The system under development via a US DOE contract with this particular company is the extreme fast charging power levels, which they say will be installed into a Tesla Semi truck. But what I think they mean by that is they're going to buy one as a customer and retrofit it. Nothing to do with Tesla, but of course, you know, put that name in the title of a press release and it'll get my attention. And I think it did everyone else's as well. Really interesting, actually, how inductive charging has its fans, has its critics. I'm a huge fan of the curiosity of inductive charging in certain circumstances. So I think for the cars that you and I drive, getting out, plugging in a plug is not particularly onerous. Also for recharging long distance trucks like the semi truck, well, actually, you know, getting out, plugging in the mega charger, I don't know how efficient, because inductive charging is as efficient as plugging in at car levels. So the inductive chargers that are going into, there's a program with BMW putting them into their cars. It's as efficient, like 95 or 96% efficient, the same or even more by 1% or 2% as actually plugging it in, which blows my mind. How can something traveling through the air be more efficient than a cable, something solid? But anyway, there you go. But I don't know how efficient this particular system is. A lot of people assume that inductive charging is like, I don't know, 50% efficient because, I don't know, some of it just gets, the electricity, I don't know, gets lost in the air. But it's really not. But even so, I think in this situation, my personal take, not needed. I think for taxis, buses, imagine a bus that pulls up to a bus stop for 60 seconds or 2 minutes, opens the doors, people get off, people get on, there's an inductive plate underneath, and it has a big boost of power, then off it goes again, and it travels, you know, I don't know, half a mile down the road to the next bus stop, and doors open, people get off, people get on, all that time, it's charging. You know, that vehicle could run 24/7, never going back to the depot to charge, same as taxis and those kind of vehicles that are stop-start. I don't think it's right for Tesla Semi. I don't think it's not right for the cars you and I drive. But anyway, always love to hear your opinion. I sometimes give you my opinion a little bit too freely. And tell me yours. My address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. In the US, the federal EV tax credit has only been available for new vehicles, but legislation introduced last week in both houses of Congress could change that, as the chances of big spending on EV incentives and green energy in the bipartisan infrastructure package are looking a little more grim than they were when it was proposed. There is a bright spot, a bill that would establish national EV tax credits for used cars, writes Green Car Reports, the Affordable EVs for Working Families Act. It's a bill that would make a tax rebate of $2,500 on used EVs. The credit only applies to used cars that are at least 2 years old, costing less than $25,000, structured for EVs and also for those earning, less high income. So it tapers down as well. And you can only use one credit every 3 years. But look, this is enormously important because as the EV market grows in terms of being an established used EV market, as more cars come into the top of the funnel, inevitably they become second, third, fourth hand used cars. Getting people into those vehicles, enormously important, because the kind of people who are being priced out of EVs, are those without off-road parking, often those communities that are disadvantaged. And if you look at all the research, communities dominated by people of colour as well, that are less affluent. And it's just not acceptable for EVs to still be a rich man or a rich woman's game. So this, I really hope it goes through. So important. Next, in Kansas, streetlight-mounted EV chargers are coming. A new pilot project to install chargers on light poles in Kansas City could reduce one of the most commonly cited barriers to EV adoption, and that is infrastructure. According to the U.S. Census Bureau's 2019 American Housing Survey, more than one-third of U.S. homeowners and two-thirds of renters have no garage or carport, and that's a barrier, particularly with low-income communities. Like I say, the lack of access to garages and public EV charging is even worse for those communities. According to Smart Cities Dive, great newsletter to sign up to this, by the way, really, really cool, any of the Dive series. They say that partners analyzed which streetlights can technically support curbside charging based on, you know, the voltage going into the streetlight, the control, the proximity to the curb. Some streetlights in Kansas City only work at night, and we need upgrades before daytime charging works. But this work is being done, and it's around 100 or so of these street lamp chargers going in. There's tons of them in London, which I've never had the opportunity to use yet, even though pre-COVID I was working in London in a place called Richmond in the southwest. And around there, there's tons of them in terms of, I say tons, when you look at the maps, like the kind of the ZapMap app, it was always loads of chargers around near where I worked, and that was because, well, they're all of these kind of on-street ones that I know you had to sign up before you could use it, and all of those things, which I didn't need to do because I just drove home and charged when I got home. But I do think that they're really important in places like that part of London where I worked, southwest, where, you know, a lot of houses. When I lived it was sort of Twickenham and then further into London, you know, our place was 100 years old. It was a terraced house built before the motor car. And so really, really, really important. Next, EVs are changing the future of roadside breakdown. Really interesting article here from Wired, who do some great writing on all topics, but they've been talking to the RAC about their EV boost technology. Here, the Royal Automobile Club, the breakdown service, have a little diesel engine generator in the back of their recovery vans. And if they come across an EV that's stricken or run out of juice, you can charge on a Type 2 or Type 1 or Type 2. And it's 3.5 kilowatt chargers right now, but they're upgrading those to 7.5 kilowatt mobile chargers. Yes, you are running diesel, but if you just need another 10 miles to get to a charger, then you might say it's worth it. Some EVs can't be towed. Well, the AA, the Automobile Association, have also got something called the Freewheeling Hub, which I've never heard about. It attaches to the broken down vehicle. Now, some manufacturers don't want their EVs towed, even when they're in neutral, because they're not a true neutral in the motor. And so this Freewheeling Hub attaches to the broken down vehicle, and it kind of folds out from the back of the AA vehicles to be towed without the wheels touching the road and any of them rotating. And finally, we'll talk about how many models are on the market right now. Some Bloomberg NEF research shows that there are now 500 EV models on the market worldwide. And EV means plug-in and pure EV. Passenger EV sales, they are projecting to increase from 3 million last year to 66 million in 2040, according to their economic transition scenario. They say that EVs represent more than two-thirds of passenger sales in 2040. And again, you know, predicting the future is fabulously hard, but I disagree with this. They say that two-thirds of new passenger vehicle sales in 2040 are going to be electric. Nah, they're all going to be electric. You're 20 years in the future. If we are still mucking about with, oh, should we drive electric cars or should we just cause a climate crisis? In 20 years' time, there's no hope for any of us. We know what we have to do now. So, yeah, it's going to be 100% in 20 years' time. In Europe, battery EVs, they point out, are approaching price parity with combustion vehicles. I've seen them cheaper on lease deals, by the way. And buses and two- and three-wheelers maintaining the top EV adoption rates around the world right now. They actually did a really good study on the average EV range. I'll tell you this. So the average of all the cars on sale, the average EV range in 2020 was 360 kilometres. That's 223 miles. In 2012, it was just 166 kilometres versus 360 last year. What a progress we've done in less than 10 years. I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Right, question of the week time right now with eMobilityNorway.com. What's the best location, the ideal location for your charge port? Please tell me. Hello at evnewsdaily.com. Thanks to our premium partners, Phil Roberts. He runs Electric Future, EF.energy. And if you are interested in, you've got a business, commercial organisation, and energy costs are getting to you, and you'd like to put some solar, some renewables up, talk to Phil and his team at Electric Future. Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley and his EV Review Island YouTube channel. That's growing so quickly, so busy, and also Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and they replaced me to go window shop things that I would like in my driveway. And Jan at emobilitynorway.com. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, hey, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.